Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the students. Welcome back to those of you who have been away over Easter. If you could have Hebrews 11 open, if you've got a Bible, that would be really great. You're going to become probably quite familiar with these verses over the next few weeks because we're going to be going through them in bite-sized chunks to get the meat out of what faith is all about and how we can develop and build our faith. Every year when the New Year's Honours List or the Queen's Birthday comes round, it always seems to generate a big debate. I don't know if you've noticed. It has been said that far too many knighthoods and OBEs and stuff like that go to celebrities and to civil servants and government bureaucrats rather than to lollipop ladies or people who have done 50 years or so of great service for the community. And every year, at the time of the Queen's birthday or New Year, there's a whole bunch of people who get awarded OBEs or MBEs or KCMGs, usually because they're good sportsmen or else maybe because they've given big donations to the Labour Party or the Tory Party funds, depending on which is the government of the day. And it has given rise, I think, to all sorts of jokes that, in terms of getting knighted, OBEs stand for other boys' efforts, that sort of thing. But ultimately, when you stand before God on Judgment Day, what will count is not whether you've been awarded or received some award on the Queen's Honours List, but whether you are on God's Honours List. And the reason I say that is because Hebrews chapter 11 has been called God's Honours List, because it gives us a series of examples of those whom God commended for the way in which they lived. And the common characteristic for which God honored them is their faith. They exercised faith in circumstances where people like you and I would have turned tail and run. You see, actually, fear and faith are opposites. Fear comes when you take your direction from your five senses. Faith comes when you take your direction from your spirit within. That part of you that feeds on God's word. Fear is driven by the facts. But faith is driven by the truth and God's promises to his people. And so when you read this chapter about the heroes of faith, you learn a whole number of things about faith. And one is that you don't have faith until you do something. Faith is not what you say. Faith is not even what you think. It's what you do. And every one of these people those mentioned in this chapter did something that proved they had got faith in God. It wasn't what they said. We can sing about our faith. We can confess our faith, and even then may not be a believer. You know, to stand in church, as many do every Sunday, and to recite the Apostles' Creed, I believe in God, the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, and so on. That, I'm afraid, doesn't mean that you have faith. That is merely an assertion which is, in many cases, unproved. It only becomes faith when it is put to the test and stands firm. I mean, I've heard of a budgerigar that sings hymns, but it's not actually a believer. What makes us a believer is when we do something of a nature that if the Lord isn't there, and if he isn't in it, you fall flat on your face. And so God says, for example, Noah, there is a flood coming. Go and build an ark. And Noah, presumably enduring the scorn of all the local weather prophets, he goes ahead and he builds it. God says, Abraham, I want you to leave this place where you have been born and bred, and I want you to head off somewhere else, never mind where for a moment, but just believe I've got plans for you. And so Abraham abandons his security and he walks by faith to the land which God was going to give to his descendants. God says, Sarah, you're going to have a son. In human terms, it was impossible. It's so inconceivable that 90-year-old Sarah laughs at the very idea. But she comes to believe it. She comes to the point where she takes God at his word. And so Isaac is born. And then there is Moses, who led the people of Israel out of Egypt. And Joshua, who blew the trumpet round the walls of Jericho. All of them proved their faith by what they did. They did something crazy in the eyes of the world. But it worked. They had faith. They staked their future on the Lord. They took a terrific risk. And if the Lord wasn't there, they would have come badly unstuck. And the reason that these people go on God's honors list is because faith is what pleases God. If you look at verse 6, Hebrews 11, it says something that's very profound. No one can please God without faith. You see, faith is given not so that we might perform mighty miracles, but that we might please God. That is actually the more important thing. The devil can work miracles, but he cannot please God. And nothing that can ever be said about you or me would be greater than what is said about Enoch at the end of verse 5. He had pleased God. And if this can't be said of us, then whatever else might be said is meaningless. Because in this statement is the whole purpose for which we were created and the standard by which our life is judged. And as Christians, our number one priority should be to please God rather than to please people. And that can be costly. Especially as there is an awful lot of faith teaching around these days in the church that will say the sort of thing, if you have faith, you can drive a Mercedes 350 SE. If you've got faith, you can live in a mansion. If you've got faith, you can have this, you can have that, you can have the other. It is the kind of miracle-a-day theology that is preached by many televangelists. That if we're filled with the Spirit, and if we trust the Lord, We will always be healthy and wealthy, that we will have all honey, no bees, no work, all ease. Quite simple. But you know, I read in this chapter that if you have faith, you might end up being cut in two. If you have faith, you might be killed for it. That is the sort of faith that the Bible talks about. Not the kind of cheap faith that uses faith to get what you want. You can always understand things better, I think, if you look at examples, which is why we're given this long series of examples on faith in this chapter. This is God's honors list. This is the list which you want to get your name on, because these are the ones who God commends. And it's a long, long line of people who overcame overwhelming odds by their faith. And it says, if you look further down to verses 33 and 34, they conquered the lions. They conquered being thrown into fiery furnaces. They escaped assassination by the sword. They put foreign enemies to flight. This is great stuff. This is just the kind of faith that I want. And then the writer carries on in verse 35. Others were tortured. Some were stoned. Whoa. Did I misread that? Have another look. Others were tortured. Some were stoned. Some were sawn in two. They were put to death with the sword. I mean, help, this is not what the televangelists promise on TV. But you see, here comes an even more startling development. And it's so important to get the message of this. It's mind-blowing. Some conquered or escaped a horrible end by their faith. And some were conquered and didn't escape and still showed faith. Some were delivered from assassination by faith, and some were assassinated by faith. Some were stoned, some were sawn in two by faith. And the Bible identifies both here as examples of faith. And until we have seen that, we haven't actually seen the full picture. It is so natural and so instinctive for us to think that it is by faith that we get out of trouble. But sometimes it is by faith that we go into it and face it and come through it. It's by faith that we can be saved from death, and it's by faith that we can die. This is the incredible truth in this chapter. And when we realize this, we can glorify God in our bodies, whatever happens. We may be healed, and we can glorify God for the faith to be healed. We may not be healed, and we can still glorify God by the faith that we have in Him. We can glorify God by becoming martyrs as well as by being saved from death. You see, God doesn't necessarily offer us a faith that provides a way out of the testings of life. Sometimes He offers us a faith that provides us with a way through the bad times. And that makes all the difference. Peter's first letter, I think, puts it best. When he wrote these words, Peter chapter 1, these trials have come so that your faith, of greater worth than gold, may be proved genuine and may result in praise, glory, and honor when Jesus Christ is revealed. Many of you probably read about how San Francisco is built along the San Andreas Fault. It's a geological phenomenon which means that there is a high risk of earthquakes. And there was an earthquake of major proportions there back in 1906. And you will actually find, if you've been to San Francisco, that many of the high-rise buildings in that city have got a little notice or a plaque on the outside of the building that says, "This building was constructed to withstand earthquakes." Now, you may believe that, but that isn't faith. Wait until the earthquake hits, and if you stay inside that building, then I believe you've got faith in that notice. Faith only becomes faith when it is put to the test and stands firm. That is what Peter is talking about here. And some of you this morning, you might be undergoing some kind of metaphorical earthquake in your life right now. Believe you me, I know that kind of thing. But please don't think that because you haven't been healed, or because you're undergoing some kind of really stressful trial, that that means that you haven't got faith. You see, God's gift of faith isn't given to keep you from trials. It's to keep you from being afraid. Because really, the hardest burdens in life, the toughest things you've got to bear, are the things that might happen, but usually don't. And God sees to it that we've got the grace to bear the actual and the present. He gives you enough faith for today, because he knows that you're not able to carry today's load and tomorrow's burden at the same time. I mean, after all, our faith is not a thing. It's in a person. The Apostle Paul says in 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 12, "I know whom I have believed, and I'm persuaded he is able to keep that which I've committed to him against that day." And if you want faith, like these biblical heroes in God's honors list in Hebrews chapter 11, then very simply, if we're to have their faith, we must know their God. To have Abraham's faith, it's vital that we have a relationship with Abraham's God. If we don't, then everything that these Old Testament heroes did will seem superhuman to us. And they weren't superhuman. They were ordinary people, like you and I. And if we don't know their God as they did, then we can only stand and admire them from a distance. And Hebrews 11 becomes little more than a kind of wax museum of long dead heroes. Rather than a living experience with which you can identify and be part of today. These people were real people. The God of this chapter is the living God, and he wants to know you today as familiarly and as intimately as he knew these people. He's a God who is as willing to help us in our lives as he was to help Abraham and Moses and Noah and Isaac all those years ago. What we're called to have is not so much great faith in God, but faith in a great God. When the disciples said to Jesus on one occasion, "Lord, increase our faith," Jesus said that actually all they needed was faith like the grain of a mustard seed. And this faith comes like Abraham's, through hearing the promises of God and acting on them. And you know, one of the most amazing promises of all is to be found in verse 16 of this chapter. It says, "God is not ashamed to be called their God." That little possessive adjective, "their God," sums it all up. God doesn't want to be remote from his people, and he will not be remote from them. And the Christian life is a relationship, a personal relationship, in which God knows and loves and cares for his people, and in which his people know and love and trust in him. Have you got that kind of relationship this morning? If you haven't, then this chapter, in a sense, or this message this morning, might be a little bit premature for you. But the challenge is that we need to ask, where is our ultimate security? Is it in this life? Is it in our pension? Is it in our job? Is it in our marriage or our family? Or is it your faith and your trust in an almighty Father who is bigger than all of those things, and who says, "Come to me and trust me with all your concerns and all your needs and all your anxieties, because my grace is sufficient for you." Let's bow our heads and pray.